brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A blistering 90 degrees here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Pycod, Virginia. Almost heaven, nearly hell, as our buddy Devin likes to say. It is the first day of July 2014. On this day in 1961, which would be 53 years ago, my parents were married. At this very house. Yep. It was apparently a sunny day, July 1st, 1961 was. Somewhere there's a photograph. I looked for it today. I was actually going to post it. No luck. But, nonetheless, worth remembering. At least for what remains of this little family. Hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find access to the chat room, wherein we have a lovely, hoppin', jumpin', dandy good time each and every broadcast evening. The folks wandering into the room now, even as I speak, two of our indefatigable chat room moderators present and accounted for, Sparky and Texas Betsy in the room. Jan and Jerry are with us. SKU has dropped on by. More will be coming by shortly. Good evening, all. This, of course, is a... Well, I have to get this out of the way. This is listener-supported radio. And listener-supported radio means that we don't have any advertisers. We don't have anybody out there asking you to buy gold now or buy a bowling ball, picking up vacuum cleaner and drop it on a Swedish mattress while rubbing... hair regrowth herbal tonic into your little old noggin. Not assuming. No, of course, not everybody needs that, but I'm just saying. None of that. So it is you who keeps all of this going, and there is a matching offer on the table. It is the first day of the month, and that means that we have gotten started. Thank you very kindly to Texas Betsy, and thank you very kindly to our buddy Randy, who is almost without fail the first contribution of every month. And it has become a tradition here that the first of the month brings Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge is on the table. Shirley, at the beginning of every month, offers up a matching challenge of $150 for the first 150 that comes in. If you want to take part of that, that means that whatever you send in will be doubled up to the amount of $150. If you send in 10, Shirley will turn it into 20. You send in 15, Shirley will turn it into 30. You send in 25, Shirley will make it 50. Like that, up to the first $150, which will get July off to a decent start and hopefully help keep us out of those worrisome and more than a little bit annoying holes. And we'll find ourselves in a bit of a hole here toward the end of the week because the 4th, Independence Day, is Friday, and I'm not going to be here. I'm going to do something with the family, probably with the family and the grandbabies and, the whole kit and caboodle, and I'm really, really looking forward to it. So it would be nice to get out in front of that. Let's see. By the way, this being the week of Independence Day, Dr. Bill started yesterday, and he continued today, and he's going to continue tomorrow with an in-depth analysis of why the Lockean interpretation of the Declaration of Independence is just plain wrong. The last 2 days have been magnificent. Tomorrow will be the same. He will begin, Dr. Bill will, at 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Of course, that is that's 10 a.m. on the Pacific, in the Pacific time zone. And I invite you, I encourage you, in fact, to avail yourselves of either his live broadcast or his podcast for the simple reason that when Dr. Bill is talking about it, and many, many, many members of the Horn Family Commune congregation can attest to this as well, when Dr. Bill talks about American history, it absolutely comes alive. What does our buddy Richard say? Dr. Bill makes me feel like I'm on acid. In a good way. Because it is a complete re-examination and re-understanding of everything most of us ever thought we knew about the origins of this country. That's why the Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility, that's why we describe it as an ongoing inquiry into American political origins and evolving institutions. Nothing is ever static. Nothing is ever carved in stone. Everything changes, and this particular line of inquiry in which Dr. Bill has been engaged for the past 2 days is nothing short of fascinating. The Lockean view of the Declaration of Independence is a brutal view, a limited, a narrow view, whereas the view as promulgated under the Scottish Enlightenment is something altogether again different. And odds are, unless you have studied American history at or above the master's degree level, you have never, ever, ever heard any of this. So, again, I encourage you, get Monday and Tuesday's podcast. They're already gone by. You can find the podcast address over at whiterosesociety.org. I also put the shows in the Horn Dropbox if you want to participate that way. You need to send me an email asking me to invite you to the Dropbox, and I will. And then join in live. You can even call in and enjoy the program that way. Dr. Bill loves dialogue, and your comments are more than welcome. Tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, the final program for this week, as Dr. Bill wraps up his examination of the Scottish Enlightenment and its influence on the Declaration of Independence. Dull it ain't. Not in the least. If all of us could have had history taught to us by the likes of a Dr. Bill, I dare say we would be a much more civically engaged country in the United States. So there's all of that. Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge on the table, and we'll hopefully keep up along the way as folks kick in and double their money thanks to Shirley's good offices. Thank you, Shirley. Thank you very, very much. But we must also certainly take into account the fact that this is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Titanic Tuesday being so named by our buddy Jim in Beckley for the 962nd tier right-wing blatherskate who, upon being queried by one of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking faithful as to why there are fossilized shellfish in the various rock strata of these here Appalachian mountains of West Virginia, responded that, and you know, he didn't even have to think about it. He just responded right there on the spot. Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. You know, I can imagine the Titanic plates probably did get moving pretty good once upon a time, 100 years or so ago. Pretty good indeed. We still have no word on what the movement of the Titanic sherbet cups caused in terms of fossilized rock strata. But Titanic Tuesday is, as a result, a celebration of what passes for intellect in the right wing. Because it is stirring, is absolutely stunning when you behold it. And we have so many examples. There are examples that are absolutely unavoidable this time through. I think we have to start. Yeah, why not? I think we have to start with Mike Lee, who is actually a senator from the state of Utah. You might remember he got his he finagled his way into the Senate of the United States by participating in a Tea Party coup d'etat a couple of years back, and has since been recognized, although God knows why, as a constitutional scholar. He knows all about that Constitution, and Mike Lee does, but you know what? He is a polymath. He knows many things. And especially, he knows about how the women's use their women innards. Mm-hmm. He was called upon, according to Think Progress, he was called upon to appear on something called the Will Cow majority on Sirius XM. This is hosted by something called an Andrew Will Cow. Will Cow for food? Will Cow for fun? Who knows? And they proceeded to discuss, in quite possibly as stupid terms as is humanly possible, the Hobby Lobby decision. At which point, Andrew Will Cow, or not, in the way of setting up a question to be put to constitutional scholar and women's innards expert Senator Mike Lee, said the following. He said that the Hobby Lobby decision turned, and you'd be surprised how many people out there don't have any freaking idea what the Hobby Lobby decision was about. They seem to think it was about freedom and Jeebus and free Jeebus and limited government. And Wolverines! And whatever it is that burbles up out of the thin gray settlings that slosh around between their ears and pass for brains in a right-winger's skull. And in the case of Andrew Will Cow, I wonder if his middle name is May Pig. Andrew Will Cow, in setting up a question to constitutional and women's innards scholar Senator Mike Lee, said he asked whether we should understand the Hobby Lobby decision as, quote, and this is a real live quote, thank God, just that you can send the thank you letters later that I'm not actually running audio at you. Whether Hobby Lobby was about, quote, sit down, 13 minutes past the hour, and here's our first duct tape and hockey puck warning. Whether or not a person who runs a business should be forced to provide something that is largely for recreational behavior if it goes against their religious beliefs. Yeah, really? Women use contraception for recreational purposes. You remember that exchange in Woody Allen's Play It Again, Sam, when Woody Allen's character and Diane Keaton's character discuss the relative merits of taking a Darvon with orange juice? Yeah, recreational. Strictly recreational. I mean, the women people with their women innards, they spin that little birth control pill wheel and they pop those little colored pills out and sometimes they mash them up on a mirror and snort them or maybe cook them in a spoon and run them up their arm. Get one of them hot doses of progesterone. That's why you get the hot flashes, because they're recreationally using them, their lady women innards medicines pills for fun. Okay, so, but never mind. That's what Andrew Maypig Will Cow said. What matters is the response from constitutional scholar and women's innards expert, Senator Mike Lee of Utah, who is a good, God-fearing, upstanding Mormon, I guess. And to the question of whether or not a person who runs a business should be forced to provide something that is largely for recreational behavior if it goes against their religious beliefs, Senator Mike Lee replies, yeah, that's right. That's right. This administration is using the often coercive power of the federal government to force people into their way of being and their way of existing, their way of believing and thinking and acting. No, really. I do so sincerely wish I was making that up, but I am not. Recreational birth control pill use. It's a thing. It's going to be big. It's better than sniffing burlap now, isn't it? I know. By the way, Sandra pointing out to me via Twitter that Mike Lee also knows a right smart about the Mountain Meadows Massacre. It's been a while since we talked about Mountain Meadows. That's when those fine, upstanding pilgrims from Kolob, originally, of course, speaking their Reformed Egyptian, decided to slaughter some innocent people and blame Indians. Over at a website called Telestial State, the absolute worst Utah has to offer, this via Sandra. Fun family vacation idea, the site of the Mountain Meadows Massacre. Good morning, class. We're going to discuss a little history today. I read yesterday in the Salt Lake City Tribune, not the Deseret News, since 1870, that the site of the Mountain Meadows Massacre is now a National Historic Landmark. What is the Mountain Meadows Massacre, you probably don't wonder to yourself? Oh, it's that one time when a bunch of Mormons murdered a bunch of immigrants, so no big deal. Yeah, the article goes on to point out the Mountain Meadows Massacre of September the 11th, irony, 1857, is something the Mormon Church would really rather sort of forget. But it doesn't entirely go away. No. But here's the fun part. The leader of the Mountain Meadows Massacre was a fellow by the name of John D. Lee. Oh, those Lees do get around, don't they? John D. Lee. He got drummed out of the Mormon Church. And, of course, he was then also subsequently executed by firing squad. Right before they pulled the triggers, John D. Lee said, I do not believe everything that is now being taught and practiced by Brigham Young. I do not care who hears it. It is my last word. I have been sacrificed in a cowardly, dastardly manner. And then they pulled the trigger. A little over 100 years later, the Mormons reinstated John D. Lee into, I don't know, Mormon heaven or something. But here's the fun part. Guess who his great-great-great-grandson is, who knows, oddly enough, so much about the Constitution of the United States, against whom his great-great-great-granddaddy arguably committed treason, and knows so much about women's insides. That's right. Yippers. Senator Mike. Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's right. They're using it. The women are using birth control pills for recreational behavior. Lee. Ain't that just charming? Oh, for pity's sakes. Like I said, this is not going to be a timid or tepid little Titanic Tuesday. Not at all. Not when you're starting out with that. Really? Recreational use of birth control pills. Does this idiot even know how they have to be taken? Now, I am an adult male of some passing familiarity, and I know that with most birth control pills, you have to take them regularly. You don't take one at noon on Sunday and take another one at 6 a.m. Monday and the next one at 3 p.m. on Tuesday. You kind of try to take them at the same time every morning, every evening, you know, whenever's most convenient. That kind of takes the recreation out of it, doesn't it? And I'd need a little help here. You have to be on it for how long before you can get out there and just fornicate like a wanton harlot, like Mike Lee knows that all the women people who take the birth control pill do? Yeah. And, of course, all of America's being coerced by that one in our White House into taking birth control pills. This administration is using the often coercive power of the federal government to force people into their way of being and their way of existing. You have to exist all anti-colonial like and Kenyan Muslim and be all usurpy and stuff. God almighty, the idiots. But this is, after all, a celebration of Titanic intellect. And Titanic it is indeed. Hey, thanks going out to Robert and Asa, who jumped in and doubled their money. They have just turned, between the two of them, $35 into $70 via Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Thank you very much, Robert and Asa. So that means we've got $115 to go to finish Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Oh, golly Moses, we are going to be 17 shades of busy. How busy? Hey, you want to hear? Okay, so here's some Titanic intellect. I was made aware today by our buddy Carl on Facebook of a publication called The Week, and I did not delve deeply enough into it to really get a handle on it, but it really seems pretty jeebusy. I don't know. Maybe sort of liberally jeebusy? I'm not sure. But a person by the name of Damon Linker has authored a piece there, which we will celebrate on this here Titanic Tuesday, Why Liberals Should Cheer the Hobby Lobby Decision, with the subheading, Genuine Liberalism, you know, no true Scotsman, is capable of accommodating a multitude of viewpoints, even on contentious issues like contraception. Notice how they just kind of sneak that in there? Contentious issues like contraception. How in the name of Wetzilopochtli can contraception, which is an individual choice made by an individual and not subject to a group determination, how can that be contentious? But do you see how it works?
Oh, see, those women are engaging in contentious behavior by taking that contraception. See how contentious it is? Because I don't like it. That makes what she's doing contentious. See, I'm contending. Me and my ain't got a uterus. So this Damon Linker, who may or may not be a good person, I don't know, says, the Supreme Court's 5-4 decision in the Hobby Lobby case giving certain corporations an exemption under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act to the Affordable Care Act's contraception mandate is a travesty, an outrage, a monumental setback for the rights and reproductive health of women. At least that's what many liberals are saying. Which is unfortunate, says Damon Linker, because liberals should be cheering the decision on. At which point I was thinking, okay, this may be going somewhere. Maybe we should be cheering the decision because it is further proof that the only answer to 99.999999% of this miserable stupidity is to finally, once and for all, establish universal single health care, universal single-payer health care in this country and have done with this stupidity of involving business in people's individual personal health care decisions. I was, of course, entirely wrong. Because Mr. Linker continues, the notion that liberalism is primarily an ideology of personal liberation and social egalitarianism, an ideology imposed, upheld, and enforced by the government uniformly across civil society, has become widespread among American liberals, and only in the past few decades. Notice it's only a notion. Prior to that time, liberalism was understood to be a system of institutions designed both to protect individual liberty and to foster a robust civil society in which those individuals can freely join together in collective pursuit of various and often conflicting visions of the human good. Churches are one important part of such a civil society, but so are corporations. Notice that individuals being an important part of that mix doesn't get mentioned by Mr. Linker. Who, the bio at the bottom notes, by God, has also written for the New Republic. As if that's something you would put on your resume. Yes, liberals should uphold individual rights, but, it's those buts that always get you. Yes, liberals should uphold individual rights, but they should also uphold the freedom of private entities like churches and businesses. Notice how churches and businesses are now hand in hand to maintain their religiously based identities. Churches and businesses now have religiously based identities, even when part of that identity clashes with the rights of individuals. So, in other words, we must subsume individual rights, this guy is arguing, to the religious based identities of a business. Oh, but Damon is a sharp one. He's already anticipated my objection. Wait, isn't that contradictory? Of course it is. Just like life itself. And here comes the straw man. As everyone except children and ideologues understand, goods sometimes conflict with one another. Liberalism's greatest virtue and strength as a political philosophy is its effort to adjudicate those conflicts, to allow people on various sides of moral and theological clashes to reach peaceful settlements that, on the whole, maximize human freedom. So what happened with the Hobby Lobby decision is we were just resolving a conflict between two goods, the good, the manifest good that is Hobby Lobby, and the manifest good that is some harlot female out there recreationally taking contraception. Yeah, two can play at this straw man game, by God. And then he goes on to explain to us idiots that freedom is messy, and that there's lots of compromises, and that often nobody's really happy. But he says that, that's still much better than the other possibility, which is making a group of one group of people happy to the exclusion of the happiness of others, which is exactly what happened in the Hobby Lobby decision. He says that we're allowing people on various sides of moral and theological clashes to reach peaceful settlements that, on the whole, maximize human freedom. How was human freedom maximized by the Hobby Lobby decision, since the Hobby Lobby is a closely held corporation and not a human, but wound up getting said preferential treatment because of the weird imaginings and fantasies of the wholly, entirely bizarre Green family? Now, it only gets better. Take the issues involved in the Hobby Lobby case. You knew we were going to get here. Should contraception be legal and freely available for purchase? Yes, and it is. Well, I'm glad he comes down on the side of the women with the women innards. How nice of him! How freaking noble! How what a delightful use of his shiny sparkly privilege. Should contraception be included in health care coverage? Declares Damon Linker. Well, in most cases, yes. But not if a private entity, a church, business, or a closely held corporation, opposes such coverage for religious reasons. So the answer is automatically no if the women with the women innards are working for a church, business, or closely held corporation that doesn't like contraception because they have really weird beliefs. Because believing trumps knowing. Faith, baby! Yeah. And then, and I've seen this argument several times lately, much to my consternation. It goes something like this. But contraception's cheap and you can get it at every county health department for free. Do we have any women in the Horn Family Commune congregation who can put the lie to that? What happens if you say, walk into the county health department in Busted Knuckle, Alabama, and say, I'd like some of that female contraception? Well, they may give it to you. By God, by the time you show up in church on Sunday, everybody's going to look funny. Did you hear? Yeah, Marvelline down to the health department told me that you see her over there. Yeah, she come in and got some of that slut medicine. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you're not getting invited to ice cream socials anymore. Because freedom. Will women who happen to work for that exempted church, business, or corporation be adversely impacted? Yes, they will. But by how much? Because it's a matter of degree, as long as we're just talking about women, you know. If they're only inconvenienced or adversely affected a little bit, well, that's good, because it's more important that business and closely held corporations have the superior set of rights, because, of course, faith. You see how this is shaping up? That faith is more important than knowledge. Faith is more important than facts. But then this. And for me, this is kind of my personal vision of a Godwin's law when dealing with right wing privileged sickos. Listen to this sentence. At a time when and again, remember, this is a guy writing. A guy who will never have endometriosis, who will never have polycystic ovaries, who will never have pelvic inflammatory disease, who will never wonder if he is in fact pregnant, who, if pregnant, will never wonder if it's so ectopic or not. Nip. Privilege, 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 privilege. At a time when contraception is relatively inexpensive, that $1,000 IUD, it's they're giving them away in gumball machines. At a time when contraception is relatively inexpensive and the vast majority of people living in poverty can afford to own microwaves, televisions, and cell phones, Obama phones! Benghazi! I'm willing to wager that in most cases the burden will be relatively slight. So we're going to do a burden analysis now, and Hobby Lobby should be allowed to discriminate based upon their own bizarre perceived religious views, because the woman wanting the slut medicine has a microwave. There you go. Texas Betsy pointing out, I know a young lady who went on oral contraceptives at 15, not because she was sexually active, but because of painful, long-lasting periods. Well, see, she should have suffered for Jesus, because Jesus likes suffering. The young woman would not have had painful, long-lasting periods unless Jesus had wanted her to have them. Because Jesus is funny that way. A lot of us know young women who are not sexually active, who have, because it's a different time, it's a different world. As I noted last night, this is a world in which we have all manner of bizarre chemical complexes that bang around in our environment and in our life spaces that do really crazy things to our insides. But that argument, I hate that argument because you hear it all the time. It's a right wing canard. Well, yeah, but we don't really have any poor people in America because microwaves, cell phones. See. And it's interesting because that very cell phone argument was used in an essay. I can't remember the rich guy's name. He's a billionaire, and he wrote an essay saying, they're going to bring the pitchforks and they're coming for us, talking about income inequality. And specifically within that essay, he said to his other one-tenth of one-percenters, look, just because you saw a poor kid with an iPhone does not mean that inequality isn't real. Because, of course, inherent in all of that, see, when us poors choose to have a microwave, it may be something we've saved up for 2 years. We're all Mayella Yule out there saving up nickels, right? Poverty is hard, and it forces hard choices. Nick Hanauer, thank you, Devin. That's our boy. Devin, do you happen to have link? That might be worth reading in this context. Yeah, it was published in Politico. Nick Hanauer. The Pitchforks Are Coming for Us Plutocrats by Nick Hanauer. And he goes through his bona fides over the course of a couple of paragraphs, talking about how rich he got and how lucky he was to get rich. He said, what sets me apart, I think, and he talks about he's not a techno geek, he can't write code, he's not the hardest working, he's not the best looking, he's not the smartest. But he ascribes his wealth, saying, what sets me apart, I think, is a tolerance for risk and an intuition about what will happen in the future. Seeing where things are headed is the essence of entrepreneurship. And what do I see in our future now? I see pitchforks. At the same time that people like you and me are thriving beyond the dreams of any plutocrats in history, the rest of the country, the 99.99%, is lagging far behind. The divide between the haves and have-nots is getting worse really, really fast. In 1980, the top 1% controlled about 8% of U.S. national income. The bottom 50% shared about 18%. Today, the top 1% share about 20%. The bottom 50% just 12%. You can kind of see where the transfer took place. There's that wealth transfer the right wing says that they don't like, except they love it, as long as it's coming to them. The great prophet W.C. Fields, peace be upon him, once said, "I love to give to the poor, us poor." But the problem, Hanauer says, isn't that we have inequality. Some inequality is intrinsic to any high-functioning capitalist economy. Okay. The problem, he says, is that inequality is at historically high levels. I don't think this is the same argument that our buddy, Damon Linker is getting at. No, not quite. He says, "I have a message for my fellow filthy rich, for all of us who live in our gated bubble worlds. Wake up, people. It won't last. If we don't do something to fix the glaring inequities in this economy, the pitchforks are going to come for us. No society can sustain this kind of rising inequality. In fact, there is no example in human history where wealth accumulated like this and the pitchforks didn't eventually come out. You show me a highly unequal society, and I will show you a police state or an uprising. There are no counterexamples, none. It's not if, it's when." Then this, which is what sent me off to the article in the first place. "Many of us think we're special because this is America. We think we're immune to the same forces that started the Arab Spring or the French and Russian revolutions, or for that matter. I know you fellow 0.01%ers tend to dismiss this kind of argument. I've had many of you tell me to my face, I'm completely bonkers. And yes, I know," and this is where I just went whoop, "and yes, I know there are many of you who are convinced that because you saw a poor kid with an iPhone that one time, inequality is a fiction. Here's what I say to you. You're living in a dream world. What everyone wants to believe is that when things reach a tipping point and go from being merely crappy for the masses to dangerous and socially destabilizing, that we're somehow going to know about that shift ahead of time. Any student of history knows that that's not the way it happens. Revolutions like bankruptcy come gradually and then suddenly. One day, somebody sets himself on fire, then tens of thousands of people are in the streets, and before you know it, the country is burning. And then there's no time for us to get to the airport and jump on our Gulfstream 5s and fly to New Zealand. That's the way it always happens. If inequality keeps rising as it has been, eventually it will happen. We will not be able to predict when, and it will be terrible for everybody, but especially for us." And this goes on at great length. But I was struck by the irony of him, because, you know, they're out. I've heard Limbaugh say it, Flimball, I've heard Falafel Boy O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, the life support system for a haircut, all of, "Yeah, but the poor people, they got a cell phone. Yeah, the Obama phone, they threw away perfectly good American money to let the poors have cell phones." Yeah. So back to Damon Linker. "At a time when contraception is relatively inexpensive and the vast majority of people living in poverty can afford to own microwaves, televisions, and cell phones, I'm willing to wager that in most cases the burden will be relatively slight. Especially because Hobby Lobby also already covers," and this is the other thing that's out there, oh, this is spreading like wildfire, "Hobby Lobby already covers 16 of the 20 forms of contraception included in the mandate, objecting to only those it considers to be abortifacients. And every time you see this reference, it considers to be abortifacients, or it believes to be abortifacients," which again leads us back to this notion that what we're talking about here socially is the rise of what the wealth class believes over what we know. The Atlantic, with an article, here's why Hobby Lobby thinks IUDs are like abortion. No, they really do. Hobby Lobby, the Atlantic article notes, Olga Kazan writing, there are two major types of IUDs, intrauterine devices, hormonal and copper. Both kinds work by making it harder for the sperm to reach the egg, and they are very effective. Only about one woman out of 100 will get pregnant with one. IUDs are the most common form of birth control worldwide, but only about 8.5% of American women use them. Mm-hmm. So why are these little baby-proofing contraptions the subjects of a Supreme Court case? Hobby Lobby claims that IUDs and morning-after pills are more like abortifacients, meaning they kill fertilized embryos than they are like contraceptives. And their reasoning rests on the fact that, with the exception of condoms, we don't know exactly how most forms of birth control work every time they work. But we got a pretty good idea. The IUD acts as a foreign body inside the uterus, which the uterus then responds to by saying, uh-oh, can't get pregnant. So what we had here, whether we recognize it or not, no matter how tenuously Sammy Bad Breath, you know, halitosis, Alito, yeah, Sammy Bad Breath, that's his mob name, no matter how narrowly he claims to have tailored his holding, he has held that an intrauterine device is, despite all the science, an abortifacient. An intrauterine device, according to Sammy Bad Breath, it's just a little abortion machine inside a woman's woman innards. Most doctors agree, according to the Atlantic article, that a pregnancy occurs when the fertilized egg attaches to the uterus, but many people, including Hobby Lobby executives, think it happens when the egg becomes fertilized by the sperm. To them, if something interferes with a fertilized egg's assemblée to the uterus, well, it's abortion. Yeah, only it turns out that in the case of the copper IUD, they work by killing the sperm before they can get to the egg because copper is toxic to sperm. Yeah, no kidding. The sperm never reaches the egg, thus no fertilization takes place. And therefore, well, why are we surprised? The Hobby Lobby religious goons are liars. Who the funk? Irish Dave pointing up, Bob, don't you realize the microwave is vital to recreational cooking and such as that? Yeah. Ron and Raleigh under the subject line, dirt cheap. Old Rush said that birth control is dirt cheap. Rush has been pulling in $50 million plus for the past several years with that kind of scratch. What isn't dirt cheap? But even cheapness and accessibility is not the issue here. The issue is whether or not women, by virtue of being women, and especially women who work for closely held, weirdly religious corporations, will be denied the equal protection of the Affordable Care Act on the whim of some religious maniac. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Note coming in from Robert in Australia. Subject line, the pill and other random thoughts. And I got to tell you, it's right warm here in the Horn Studio sauna. We had a power outage earlier today. The craptastic Appalachian Power coal-fired grid failed when it rained. Who knew? And I think they got our air conditioner here in the studio. Yeah. What's the word? I'm spritzing? Spritzing? I don't know. I don't do Yiddish. Under the subject line, the pill and other random thoughts, Robert in Australia writes, my mother put my sister on the pill when my sister was about 13 years old. And my mother was and is a devout Catholic, quietly believes, doesn't preach. Most of my sister's friends at the Catholic girls' school she attended were also on the pill, and for no other reason than to assist with their menstrual cycles. Despite what some people think, most Catholics ignore the church's teachings on this topic. Yeah. Corporations are people now with religious beliefs, Robert asks, that they can inflict on their employees? Are you kidding me? No, I am not kidding. Now, it is interesting to note that they are Christian organizations. Had this case been brought by a Muslim organization, it wouldn't even have passed the certiorari stage. It would have been bounced. Of course you can't force your Sharia law on innocent women who work for you, or anybody, men either. People are free to eat pork barbecue, despite how your Sharia law is. And, of course, the entire right-wing nutosphere would have said, see, them Muslims done gone to the Supreme Court to try to force us to live with their Sharia law. So, no, Robert, I'm not kidding. And he continues, if corporations are people, then they're immortal because they cannot die. If they're immortal, does that now make them, dare I say it, gods? Why, yes. Do we now have to worship General Motors and the Fox Network? Well, you've got freedom of religion. We do here in America, Robert. We don't have to worship General Motors or Fox News. We are free to worship Samsung or Toshiba or Apple or Google. See what freedom means? Damn straight. Thanks, Sal, for jumping in doubling your contribution this evening. Our good friend Sal, taking us down to $110 to go in Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Thank you. Thank you very kindly. Robert and Sal and Asa would love some company. It is. Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, and the Titanic right-wing stupidity is running like a mighty river. Note coming in from Betsy, subject line IUDs. Bob. I was married by a conservative rabbi in 1991, but had my pre-marriage classes with an Orthodox rabbi and his wife. When the issue of birth control came up, the rabbi explained that the ideal is to have at least two children, but that scheduling was up to us. In order of preference, he recommended the methods that didn't actually allow the sperm and egg to meet, diaphragm and IUD, and the next up were methods where they might meet but not implant, oral contraceptives. Condoms were considered least recommended, but, big but, they didn't tell us what to do. The rabbi and his wife did tell us about certain laws, other practices, and suggested ways of living as observant Jews in a modern context. Well, see, that's great, but that's not acceptable to the right wing in this country. The right wing wants to command. You want to give me a nickel bet that the Green family are a bunch of Christian Reconstructionists? You might lose. Yeah. And And see, gay folks, this touches you, too. Gay men, this touches you. Lesbians, this touches you. Trans people, this touches you. Why? Do you happen to recall the outrage over the Colorado baker? Some wing nut said that he was forced to go to a concentration camp, which is, of course, a lie. But things like marriage equality are sweeping this country. Kentucky's anti-marriage statute arguments just got absolutely parked, way, way outside the center field fence by a judge. That's great. This country always does better when rights are expanded instead of contracted. But guess what? It won't be long before there's a case in front of the Supreme Court claiming that a sole proprietorship bakery demands the right to refuse service to gay people and not bake them a heathen homo wedding cake. Colorado dude lost on the state level. Now, I'm a pretty cynical guy, so I think I can explain to you why things like marriage equality and DOMA were stricken. On the progressive liberal side of the spectrum, the single most active and dedicated group of activists, by far and away, are gay people who have taken a whole lot of abuse for a very long time and are sick and tired of it and are not going to put up with it anymore. What's the saying? We're here, we're queer, get over it. Yeah. So the Supreme Court threw them a sop and said, okay, you want to get married, you can get married, go get married. Now get out of get out of politics, please. Go away. We've got an agenda here. But you know what? If you think the right wing aren't still coming for you, you're not paying attention. And the larger issue, and the day that I know that we will win, is the day that I see the environmental community and the gay community and the labor community standing shoulder to shoulder with women generally and saying, no, her body, her choice, her right. But don't be surprised. Don't be surprised if the right wing comes after LGBT rights. What happens to a pre-op transsexual who is taking a hormone cocktail in advance of transition or in advance of gender reassignment surgery, who innocently, not knowing that his employers are a bunch of freaks? Well, see, nothing's going to happen because there's nothing in the Affordable Care Act that mandates that kind of humane treatment for transgendered people. But if that ever does happen, you can bet Hobby Lobby will be back in court in a minute, and they'll be waving this godforsaken putrid document at the court and saying, "We're back! That Kenyan Muslim usurper wants to make us give hormones to the homos now." Never mind. You understand. I know. You think they wouldn't do that? Wrong. And what with this being Titanic Tuesday, what would it be without Bro-Fro-Mix? Rick Santorum, fetus fondler. Rick Santorum now fancies himself a movie maker. I guess he thinks he's kind of a right-wing Al Gore. This, via Raw Story. Yeah, hockey puck. Make sure it's snug.
Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof.
A child running through a field.
Liberty's always one generation away from extinction.
As our founders wrote, this is free exercise of religion, not the freedom from religion.
See there?
This is at the heart of American liberty.
They are trying to suggest that there should be a sanitized corridor where no religious viewpoint can be expressed.
The cross is ubiquitous. It's the preeminent symbol of Christianity. It's a government advertisement for one religion.
It's the government's job only to protect that there is a freedom to have religious expression.
It is un-American. It's still unconstitutional.
You know, in America, that's called free speech.
Millions of good Americans think birth control and abortion are a blessing. It's a good thing for this country. It's a good thing for this country.
When religious conscience is violated, that's our signal that government has gone too far.
Too far.
Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction.
We need to be good stewards of this time in history where we have the erosion of religious liberty happening in our lifetimes.
And it will go away if we do not attend to the threats to religious freedom right now. Bonhoeffer knows that it's possible.
Yeah, you know, you knew they couldn't resist. You get all these people and then all this stirring, ominous music and little children disappearing in fields of grass like they've been sent to the freaking cornfield in the Twilight Zone. And what do you get? Haben geworden sein! Yep, it's nothing like a little Hitler audio there. Now, what about Bonhoeffer?
Of religious liberty happening in our lifetimes.
And it will go away if we do not attend to the threats to religious freedom right now.
Okay, the image right before we start, we hear the guy with the chaplain mustache hollering, Haben geworden sein. It's a pair of guys, and you've heard them in the Nat sound all along that. It's a two-handed saw and a couple of guys sawing down a cross. Let's get back to the chaplain impersonator.
Of religious liberty happening in our lifetimes.
And it will go away if we do not attend to the threats to religious freedom right now. Bonhoeffer knows that it's possible to wake up the German church, but they don't wake up.
It's time to stop talking about Dietrich Bonhoeffer and start being willing to be him.
And if you and I don't do this, then you and I may well spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free. Free, free, free.
One generation away. The erosion of religious liberty. Coming soon. From Fetus Fondler Productions and Bro Fro Mix, Rick Santorum. 9/1/2014. Haben geworden sein! So, just to be clear.
Joining us now to discuss.
Oh, hush. To be clear, after the Hobby Lobby decision, in which freedom from religion was largely stricken down, you can't even escape it at work, the right wing, titanic intellects that they are, see themselves as being under attack. More legal questions coming from Tim from L.A., who really needs to go to law school. He's got the right mind. Okay, Bob, the ruling from the SCOTUS about the rights of an employer cannot be challenged from previous cases, as you mentioned last night. Fine. But then can the HHS and the ACA sue Hobby Lobby? Well, the ACA is just a piece of law. It can't sue anybody. Sue Hobby Lobby, a person, not a natural person, of course, who, according to the SCOTUS, is a human being. Can they be sued for not providing preventative health care but leave out the Green family as their rights cannot be violated? No, because Hobby Lobby is a closely held corporation. That means Hobby Lobby is the Green family. Hobby Lobby is the way that the Green family avoids paying a whole bunch of taxes. Because the closely held corporation is a little piece of corporate welfare that is delivered to our 1% betters on behalf of we, the people of the United States, out there struggling away trying to create a more perfect union. I hope that answers your question, Tim. No, what's coming next is a whole bunch of other cases. See, there were like 50 cases waiting on the Hobby Lobby decision, most of which have now been resolved because the well-funded right wing had an entire phalanx of these lawsuits ready to go, and all of them have been given the green light to discriminate against the women who work for them. That's how serious this is, despite the fact that the wing nuts are yeah, but it's cheap. Well, it's still a freedom that you have to pay for. So, therefore, there is no equal protection under the law. See how it works? It's going to get really, really interesting. And, yeah, I know there are those among us, or perhaps not in the Horn Family Congregation Commune, but at the very least, there are folks out on the so-called left who think that the best thing in the world is just quit voting. Well, you do that. Let's absolutely do that. You know what? Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who wrote that stinging dissent, is 79 years old. You might also recall the woman has pancreatic cancer. You want to talk about tough and tenacious? Pancreatic cancer is not something you live with for a very long time. Pancreatic cancer is one of the most deadly cancers of the whole lot of them. But she has hung on to life for all she's worth, because she knows what kind of a court she's on. Yeah. So by all means, stay home this November. Don't try to make sure that the Senate remains in Democratic hands. Because what the hell? You know, it's not like Mitch McConnell's going to let, oh, wait, didn't Harry Reid do something about that whole filibuster thing? Apparently we're going to have to sort through a little bit more legal jargon, with the reminder that I'm not a lawyer, and I don't play one on the radio. But Tim wants to know if Hobby Lobby is closely held, and closely held is a term of art, Tim, a closely held corporation as opposed to, say, a publicly traded corporation. Closely held means all the stock is held by one relatively small contingent of human beings. and it's not out there hustled on the NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange or Harry's Corner Flea Market. If Hobby Lobby is as closely held as you say it is, why is there a DBA? One becomes incorporated and have a DBA, so if a person is suing the incorporation, the plaintiff would not always have access to... Yeah, okay. So let's say we've got a corporation called Amalgamated Jesus, and that's the closely held corporation. But Amalgamated Jesus, by its charter, is allowed to do business. Now, maybe everybody wouldn't be turned on like fundies are by a business called Amalgamated Jesus. So instead, Amalgamated Jesus goes into business, and they call their business Hobby Lobby. Therefore, it is Amalgamated Jesus, Inc., DBA, Hobby Lobby, doing business as. It's quite prosaic. There's nothing, there's no loophole there. The only tool at this point in time that is left with regard to Hobby Lobby is, or Conestoga Wood, remember, they're getting a pass because everybody says Hobby Lobby, Hobby Lobby, Hobby Lobby. Conestoga Wood is a Pennsylvania corporation, and one is incorporated in one state or another. You're not incorporated by the United States. Each state controls its laws as to corporations. Conestoga Wood has gotten a pass. They make wood products for cabinetry. And apparently while they're sitting there sanding and routering and doweling and doodling and screwing in handles and whatever, they get all sweaty and hot and bothered at the thought that the lady in the front office might be taking some of them slut pills for her lady innards. And they have to fall on their knees and beg forgiveness of Jesus, because Jesus might not forgive them for that. I mean, he'll forgive just about anything, but he might not forgive you for having insurance coverage that provides those slut pills. Once again, we find out that at the core of all this is a fundamental misunderstanding or lack of understanding of the alleged grace of Christ Jesus, who is long-suffering and will put up with anything. What? Really? You murdered a bus full of toddlers? And now you're sitting in prison for the rest of your life and they're going to execute you if they don't... What? Okay, yeah. Ask the chaplain. Just ask for forgiveness and everything's taken care of. See, all of this could have been avoided by simply following their own theocratic dogma. Dear Lord, thank you for this day. Thank you for the lovely banana pudding my sister wife made me for dinner. Thank you for the sales we had of our cabinet doors. Dear Lord, thank you. Thank you, dear Lord, for peace on this here earth. What little of it there is. Thank you, Lord. And Lord, I don't want to get out of here tonight before I ask you to forgive us of our sins. You know, I said something really, really awful when I banged the BU out of my thumb with that there tack hammer. I did, Lord, and I'm sorry for it, and I hope you'll forgive me. Thank you, Lord. I know you just forgive me. Lord, your grace is all-encompassing and often beyond human comprehension in the things for which you died for us and will forgive us, dear Lord. But Lord, I come to you again in prayer with a great burden in my heart today, because Lord, our bookkeeper is still getting insurance through that Obamacare, and she's still getting free contraception with it, Lord. Lord, I hope you can forgive me. Forgive me, dear Lord, for she is still taking that awful medicine that keeps her from having babies that can then be baptized in your name and someday go to heaven, Lord. Lord,
You said we should forgive others 70 times 7. And I'm trying to forgive her for taking them pills, Lord. But, Lord, I'm hoping you'll be forgiving me 70 times 7, too, because it may be more than 490 days before she goes through the change and doesn't have to take that awful baby-killing medicine no more. Lord, can you forgive me? It's getting real hard, Lord, having to ask you to forgive me every night because it tests my faith, Lord. See? And he'd forgive them. That's their doctrine, not mine. Yeah. But they are too weak of faith. They are entirely too weak of faith to actually engage in that grace they think so much of. Which means, again, that they're phonies. They're hacks. They're carnival hustlers. Which takes me back one more. And you know, I'm sorry this thing obsesses me so. But it's a little bit like what Mr. Hanauer said about, I mean, I'll never be an entrepreneur, and I can't anticipate social trends that are going to tell me that people are going to want to order books on the Internet instead of going down to the bookstore and spending a happy hour browsing the racks. I could never predict that. I like going to the bookstore. But this case bothers me as much as it does because I do have, again, there's no tattered purple robe with the fraying applique moons and stars on it. And I know I have no idea what happened to that busted magic eight ball that always says, answer hazy, ask again later. But I can tell you where this leads. And it's not a good place. And we need to at least understand why so that as it comes back at us more and more and more, we stand ready to oppose it. Because the other side doesn't take the day off. They don't take a night off. They don't take a week off. They don't take a weekend off. They don't take a month or a year off. They are in constant campaign mode because they, have we forgotten this one? Want it all. They want it all. And so an individual by the name of Jonathan Merritt, again, over at that publication, The Week, who appears to be considerably more perceptive than his colleague, Mr. Linker, who thinks that it's okay to discriminate against women because poor people have microwaves. Well, Mr. Merritt has a different take about the Hobby Lobby. He says, "We're Christians," Hobby Lobby's president Steve Green proclaims, "and we run our business on Christian principles." This is music to the ears of many conservative Christians who rallied around Hobby Lobby when the retail chain argued, oh, by the way, Conestoga Wood, yeah, Mennonites, pacifists, anti-war people. But, you know, that's the bunch we kind of like. But they're all out there ready to leap if they think they can advance themselves over the rights of others. Anyway, Jonathan Merritt writes, that is music to the ears of many conservative Christians who rallied around Hobby Lobby when the retail chain argued at the Supreme Court that Obamacare's contraception mandate unlawfully burdened their religious beliefs. But a closer look at Hobby Lobby's actual business practices reveals this claim to be as hollow as a flute. Turn over just about any trinket in a Hobby Lobby store and you'll find a gold oval stamped with Made in China, a country that is one of the worst offenders of human dignity, unborn infant life, and economic justice anywhere in the world. As such, those shiny stickers littering every Hobby Lobby from sea to shining sea are more than a statement about a product's geographical origin. They are also a stinging indictment against the way the retailer has sought to label itself. Imagine for a moment a nation with nightmarish labor conditions, inadequate workplace regulation, and rampant child labor. You've just imagined 21st century China.
70,000 Chinese employees die every year in workplace accidents. I did not know that until I read this, and it gave me the shudders. We demand the blood sacrifice of 70,000 human beings so we can have cheap crap at Walmart and Hobby Lobby and Kmart and Target and grocery stores. Chinese apple juice. We went down that road. $3 a day to pick apples versus $9 an hour to pick apples in America. Yeah. Remember, Republicans are at their base first, last, and always cheap labor conservatives. Yeah. 70,000 Chinese workers dead every year in workplace accidents, and that works out to 200 humans snuffed out of existence every day. A little less than 10 an hour. It's 21 minutes past 7 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone, and in that time, wow, consider it, in that time, seven human beings somewhere in China have died in a workplace accident for want of essential safety. Yeah. 24 will be dead by the time this program is over. 24 more will die tomorrow during those 3 hours. For what? For what? Well, here's what. Some provinces in China are raising their minimum wage standards, but don't rush to praise them. Starting this year in Shanghai, minimum wage is rising to only $293 per month, a paltry figure that is still the highest amount paid in all of mainland China. That's about $9.77 per day. If you were wondering how Hobby Lobby can sell wicker baskets for next to nothing, now you know. See, this is the upside. If this word gets around, and apparently it doesn't work. I mean, I've dealt with some real confirmation bias on my Facebook page in the last couple of days. Even when you tell people about this, yeah, but the Bible is replete with calls for economic justice. Can you call yourself a Christian business when you leverage your profits to support an economic system that blatantly perpetuates injustice? China is also the 20th worst in the world for child labor. Can you call yourself a Christian business when you support underage labor? Jesus, after all, taught that taking one's own life is preferable to harming a child. Yeah, but IUDs, snowflake babies, silent abortions. And what of China's one-child policy, which disincentivizes having daughters to the point that it fuels an underground abortion industry? Data shows that about 13 million abortions are performed in the country each year. About 35,000 infant lives are terminated in China every day. No, they're not. They're fetuses, not infants. China accounts for 19% of the global population, but 56% of the world's female suicides. 500 women take their own lives in China every day. Now, of course, says Jonathan Merritt, a huge number of American companies outsource labor to China and thus help prop up this shameful status quo. But very few of these American companies simultaneously trumpet themselves as Christian businesses, arguing in court that providing employees with health insurance covering contraceptives violates their religious beliefs. How can this Obamacare mandate be so foul to Hobby Lobby executives while they say very little about Chinese policies forcing women to have abortions against their wills? Is abortion wrong only when the terminated life is American? Oh, there's a little accusation of privilege. If Hobby Lobby was concerned with religious freedoms, not just those of conservative American Christians, it would quit doing business in China. About that. Hobby Lobby reminds us why for-profit businesses should resist calling themselves Christian. The free market is messy and complicated and riddled with hypocrisy. Conducting business in today's global complex economy almost ensures one will engage in behavior that is at least morally suspect from a biblical standpoint. If you want to call your business Christian, by all means, go right ahead. But those who live by the label must die by it as well. Not soon enough! You cannot call your business Christian when arguing before the Supreme Court and then set aside Christian values when you're placing a bulk order for cheap wind chimes. Every time you buy a decorative platter from Hobby Lobby with a Bible verse stamped across it, you have funded the company's fight against the HHS contraception mandate, but you're also sending a chunk of change to a country that forces people to abort their children, flouts basic standards of workplace dignity, and denies more than a billion people the right to worship. Yeah, see, that's not true either. They deny people the right to worship American capitalist-style religion, perhaps. But, yeah. That's a pretty damning little piece of work. So we are at the halfway point of the program this evening, and we have 110 dollars to go to meet Shirley's Wisconsin challenge, and Robert, Asa, and Sal would love to have some company. Thanks, one and all. Remember, it's an opportunity to double your contribution. And when it's all said and done, I'll send a communication if we've met the challenge, announcing the happy news. If we don't, I won't. Let's check a couple of notes coming in via the Skype chat. Man, we are multimedia here. Oh, going back to, what's his name, Will Cow, May Pig. Will Cow's tagline, according to Asa, is, "The arguments on this program cannot be broken." You want to talk about duct tape and hockey puck, Bob? What does that mean, an argument cannot be broken? You have broken what cannot be broken. Robert with a note from Morgantown. Go get him, Bob. When court cases are judged on the basis of feelings and belief rather than proof and fact, our country is finished. Yep. The camel's nose is under the tent. And the reason that is such a visual, a strong visual metaphor is because once the camel's nose is under the tent, it's all hump. The camel's nose under the tent means the camel is in the tent. And the religion industry camel is in the tent and spitting all over us. Yeah. Yeah, Devin, I fear you're right. Sun Porch Studio is now Solar Furnace Studio. You did want the horn to go solar, Bob. Be careful what you wish for. This was not what I had in mind. So, let's take a little break. The lines are open. This is, after all, Conversation Radio, 304 574-8178 is the number to dial with a regular plain old garden variety telephone. If you want to reach out Skype to Skype, it's simply Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype, or 304-574-8178. Yeah, listener-supported conversation radio. Cool, huh? I'm Bob Kincaid. Good one-hit wonder, the Red Rockers and China. Yeah, that was a fun song eons and eons ago. This is the Horn, Titanic Tuesday, and wow, ain't it? Let's go to the phones. I do believe we have Bill. Hey, Bill.
Yeah, well, so it's nothing to do but me. Yes, seriously. Yeah, I surely put the challenge out, right?
Yes.
From Wisconsin, yeah. I think I've heard her on on a radio station out of Chicago and such. She's on the money.
She decides to talk.
She knows what she's talking about. Well, you probably saw this one if you read Guns of August, where General von Hoffman, with his quote was before the Battle of Tannenberg, he said, "This is where the night the general slept the night before the battle." And he takes Mr. to another place and says, "This is the spot that General von Hindenburg slept after the battle." Then he caps it by saying, "This is where von Hindenburg slept during the battle." I said, okay. Honesty, huh? Another thing that's got me today was listening to sports talkers, you know, some of the know-it-alls talking about soccer. And one thing about growing up in an ethnic city is I knew more soccer players than these guys. Bob, these older European guys, I don't forget cleaning games, man. These guys had, if there was a stunt to be done, these guys knew how to do it.
And of course, the United States lost to the daggum Belgians 2-1.
Well, they did, huh?
Was it a shootout? We're done. We didn't make it out of the Sweet 16. Yeah, it ended on a shootout.
Yeah, well, that came along in hockey too in the recent years. So now
I guess Belgium will face Argentina.
Well, I wouldn't give Belgium much of a shot against Argentina either.
I don't know. They came out of their group 3-0.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Well, they were first in their group.
That's why Germany got to play, I forget who, but Belgium came out of their group number one.
Well, they take that game seriously in Europe. And I'm just saying, you know, the guys that I saw here whose mother and father had accents, you know, so, I mean, they were closely related to the sport. And one guy would come in after a morning playing soccer, after a Sunday morning, he's limping. He's got bruises all over his shins, and this was not, you know. I mean, I played a lot of baseball as a kid. That was the game we played constantly. And, man, after you get put in right field, you better have an alarm clock. Because how many good left-handed pool hitters were there at age 10?
No.
Who could hit the ball to you?
No. Yeah, right field is sort of an afterthought at that level. Of course, I remember when Ferg started playing T-ball, and that was just organized chaos. Wherever the ball was hit, nine people would run to it. Nine little people would run to it.
Well, again, Bob, that's where the damn printed book. I had a thing, the real book about baseball, and you sat down and you read what each position, what the coaches look for. How many left-handed catchers did you ever see? You know?
There is no left-handed catcher.
No. Because throwing the second base, they had to come across, you know, from that side, and all it takes is a few seconds of slow work, and it doesn't work, you know. And me, I was a big baseball fan. I was talking to somebody.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I played catcher, and I loved it. Because you got to watch the whole game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was a kid when Johnny Bench was completely redefining the position. And, I mean, there were some great catchers then. Bench. Randy Hundley with the Cubs. Manny Sanguian with the Pirates. Just great catchers. Ray Fossey was a good one with the Tigers.
Fossey was injured by
until Pete Rose ruined him in the All Star game.
That All Star game can do that. Ask what's his name? The great pitcher. The one that was doing the St. Louis Cardinals games. What was his name? Pitched in the 30s. Heavy down-home accent. And
who, Diz? You're not talking about Dizzy
what?
Dean?
Dizzy, okay. Yeah. Dizzy Dean, yeah.
Yeah.
Dizzy, Earl Averill, Cleveland's player, rattled the ball off of Dizzy's leg in the All-Star game one year, because he only played one in the old days. And Dizzy had to start changing his delivery. And believe it or not, if you do that, you know?
Yeah.
I'm trying to get my hands on a history of the Indians that was published in 49. And I actually was lucky enough to stand on a street corner at age 5 and watch the World Series Indians champions go by. And, you know, Satchel Paige came to Cleveland in 48, and he won 6 games. And the Indians finished in a dead heat tie with the Boston Red Sox. They had a 1-game playoff just to see who won the pennant. And Cleveland beat the Boston Braves. They had a pitcher named Gene Dearden, left-handed guy who could throw a knuckleball, but Casey Stengel got the word around in that winter that if you didn't swing at what this guy was throwing, he'd walk you. So that was the end of that guy. 1-game career. But 41 was an amazing season. Two things happened that had never been duplicated since. Ted Williams hit .406. And Joe DiMaggio came to Cleveland and played at Old League Park with a 56-game hitting streak, and it was stopped that night when he came in. So that record still stands, though, 56. Pete Rose was pushing that record for a while, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he was. He broke the National League record, but he couldn't catch up. What is it, 56 games with DiMaggio?
Yeah, 56 for DiMaggio.
But I'll tell you what, everybody thinks that is a near unbreakable record. And maybe we've had this discussion before, and the baseball geeks will all enjoy this. I contend that there is another record that is far less likely to ever be broken.
What's that?
The consecutive no-hitter record.
Yeah, who did that, Ryan?
Oh, Johnny Vandermeer, Cincinnati Reds.
Oh, Vandermeer, sure. That was in the Fellers' early years. Yeah, I remember reading about Vandermeer.
Because he threw back-to-back no-hitters. Now, that record may someday be tied. The odds of it ever being broken are approaching the impossible.
Well,
that would mean throwing 3 consecutive no-hitters.
I don't think it's going to be done. Because the idea, the starting pitchers today, if you do 6 innings, 7 innings, they'll get you out of there and bring in the setup man and the short man, and it's all over, you know?
Well, yeah, sitting there counting pitches, and you know, there aren't any Denton True Youngs out there anymore.
Oh, sorry, yeah. I remember he was, I think he came out of Youngstown, was it, or someplace in Ohio. He pitched for Cleveland for many years.
And you know, you're just not going to have the, my God, to look at his record, the record of complete games that he threw. And, yeah, it was a different game, I guess. And everybody says, oh, you know, the bowl was different and the mound was different. Blah, blah.
Dead ball, yeah.
Yeah, but that still does not speak to the fact that you're standing on the mound and throwing as hard as you can throw for 9 innings at whatever the other side can put up against you. You still got to get it across the plate.
Yeah. I can't believe that your father must have been a big baseball fan.
Oh, God, yes.
Because he opened up your mind to a lot of things that, like you say, that'll never be done again. I forgot about Vandermeer's no-hitters. Because Feller wrote a book for kids called Bob Feller's Strikeout Story, and he mentioned that. Because I think Vandermeer was, what year was that?
It's the mid-40s. Maybe 46, 44?
No, I think it was earlier than that, Bob.
Was it?
Yeah, I think
well,
so.
Well, lucky for us, we have the interweb tubes here.
Yeah, check it out for me. Will you correct the old buzzer here? Because I don't want to say this, but my memory took some kind of a beating. But thanks to a couple of horn members, the rest of me is still here, you know? And I don't show any signs of what I went through either. That's the amazing. People see me and they say, well, I thought you would be looking like that. Nah, I'm still ugly in the old-fashioned way, you know, the way I always had been.
I'm looking here. Let's see. Oh, okay. No, no, no. You're right. You're right, Bill. It was June 11th, 1938 was no-hitter number one, and June 15th, 1938 was no-hitter number two.
Yeah, because Sellers came up in 38 or 39. He was a 19-year-old kid. No, he was 17.
The first game, the first game was against Boston, and Cincinnati won 6-0. It was a home affair. And the second game came against Brooklyn at home at Ebbets Field, and it, too. No, it wasn't. It too, was a shutout. It was a an 11-0 game.
Yeah. See, it was a different... That was the game until, well, of course, you know, critics will point to the 58 NFL championship, Baltimore and the New York Giants. And that's the one that went overtime, and Amici scored. And in fact, what was a heartbreaker for me was the Browns won it in New York in 58, and all they needed to do was tie, and they lost. And they had to come back again and play New York again, and they lost again, and that went, you know.
Well, Vandermeer was apparently on a streak, Bill, because he also holds the record for consecutive hitless innings. He was 3 2/3 of the way through the fourth inning, or he was 3 2/3 of the way into his third start before he gave up his first hit.
Jesus, Bob, what were they throwing in those days? Did you have to duck the water as the ball approached the plate?
Vandermeer was a southpaw. Who just threw one mean-ass streak of smoke.
Yeah. That's what they did. A lot of fastball pitchers were, you know, with something else. I mean, I've seen some good... There's a really good book on Satchel Paige that's worth reading. That man's career was interesting. You know, one time he was hired by Trujillo to go down to the Dominican Republic and do exhibition pitching before Trujillo's speeches because he would draw a big crowd. And then Trujillo could spout his crap all over the place.
Cuba and the Dominican Republic are two absolutely...
Haiti.
Yeah, they're baseball-crazy islands. I mean, they love the game.
Yeah. Well, that's when you look at baseball today, that's where the names are coming from. Because, they can play year round, you know, whereas up here, you know, up there, there's places in the States where you can play year round, California, Arizona, you know. But, football came along and just pushed that game out of, you know, people's loves. But that's another story. I don't want to get hung up on the...
You'll get a kick out of this. I mentioned Ray Fosse a few minutes ago. Marty, who's a big baseball fan, big Giants fan, Marty is. He said, Ray Fosse is now the color analyst of the Oakland A's. I find him so irritating, I wish Pete Rose had hit him harder in that All-Star game.
Color guy can be
harsh
that way in sports. Because basically, I mean, I listen to these sports talk shows when there's nothing else to listen to, and first of all, Bob, most of them don't seem to have a bit of knowledge of the game except what happened yesterday and what's going to happen tomorrow.
Well, that's what made the great ones great, and the other thing that made the great ones great is that they came out of radio, and nothing is a better exemplar of radio's status as theater of the mind than listening to a genuinely talented play-by-play and color guy doing baseball. Listening to football on the radio is not the same. Listening to basketball on the radio is not the same. And God knows, listening to golf on the radio will just put you into a phone call.
I'm telling you, Bob, I've seen a lot of hockey, but it's still very hard to stay up with what's going on.
Oh, I tried to listen to the radio coverage of the the afternoon's World Cup match with Belgium. And, you know, I could follow it, but it wasn't the same. Anything, and here's my theory on it, anything that is run on a clock isn't susceptible to the conversational nature of radio And thus baseball is. And really, the mark of, if you want to know, the mark of genius, to my way of thinking, the mark of genius of a real great baseball guy on the, or baseball announcer on the radio, that was kind of sexist of me.
Well, that's a good one.
The mark of a great one is what happens during the rain delay.
Oh, yeah. When they can keep things moving. That's a tough spot. But it's just, I look at, to me, the two best sports for kids are soccer and basketball. Mainly because you're moving all the time. I mean, if you're talking about a health standpoint, you know, you're talking about exercise. It's a good way for kids to burn off a lot of stuff, you know. Me, I started riding a bike when I was 50, and man, I shed 35, and I also watched every gram of fat I put in my body, and I dropped 20-some pounds in about 4 months. Of course, the following year I had a heart attack. So much for that idea. You know, we undo so much bad in so such a time, you know. But yeah, it's a great, this cup is a great, great thing when it's going on. People gotta be nuts in some of these countries. Because I used to go to a Hungarian place here, and this guy would have soccer on television every time you go in there, you know. Because that was the game. Yeah, but anyway, I'm getting a book coming from a buddy of mine on the West Coast. He's making a CD package here. But this guy, Max Hastings, who covers, he covered World War II very well, and he's got something coming on One. And it's so hard to find stuff on One in this country. Because we were only in it for, what, a year and some odd months?
Right.
Although American companies were getting rich building submarines for the British.
Once you get done with The Guns of August, I highly recommend going and reading A Distant Mirror.
Yes, that's
which
the
is
one
also
of
Barbara
the 14.
Tuchman. And she was,
yes,
it, it was, it was
in, the 14th?
Yeah, that's the 14th century.
Yeah.
And she was inspired to write it after writing The Guns of August. Because she called it A Distant Mirror is because she saw such parallels between the chaos of the 14th century and the chaos of the 20th.
Yeah, there's some good stuff. I had one called Castles of Steel, which was the British and German fleets in World War One, and you know, how the Kaiser was trying to build a fleet to parallel the English, and the English didn't like that idea, and then the invasion of Belgium, and the German military was scary, Bob. They were scary in 1914, and they certainly didn't get much better in 1939, did they?
Well, they were pretty terrifying in 1870, too.
Yeah, I know very little about that. Sedan I've heard of, you know.
Yeah. They just rolled up the French with almost no effort whatsoever, because they were the first modern military to treat it as a science.
Yeah.
You know, with timetables and clocks and goals and.
Well, if the Americans weren't too out of the question, Bob, you know, in 1863, the 11th and 12th Corps were pulled out of the Army of the Potomac and shipped on the side of the Tennessee away from Chattanooga. What is it? That's on the other side. Bridgeport, or what's the name of that town on the other side from Chattanooga?
Oh, golly, I can't even, I'm not even sure.
Because they moved these guys by the rail in about 10 or 15 days, but
yeah.
They moved 20,000 men that quickly. It's like, my God. Because that was the beginnings. If you've ever seen shots of the Petersburg entrenchments and mess, and look at something from World War One, and you looks like the same picture, you know, bunch of mud piled up and everything else. And of course, you and I may know about this thing called the Spanish influenza. You familiar with that?
Oh, absolutely. It has a direct impact on the fact that I'm in existence now.
Well, where did that come from, Bob? I mean, what the hell was, did they ever pinpoint the damn thing?
I don't really know, but I'll bet you somebody in the chat room probably does.
Well, those guys, there's a lot of brains there. And a bunch of that in the chat room, there's a lot of brains and a lot of knowledge. And they, Bob, that's what I miss mostly about the phones is the Friday night, getting a chance to talk with these guys who were, well, Sparky straightened me out on that. I told him I woke up and 6 o'clock one morning, and it was during the 74 Arab-Israeli confrontation. And they announced that Strategic Air Command was on the alert. And I, the next time that our news came through, they never mentioned it. But Sparky was involved with some work for the government at the time.
And yeah, I remember when he did that. And all I can tell you, Bill, is that we're going to try to get the regular phones back, but it is a rather lengthy and frustrating process, to say the very least.
Well, by the sound of it, there's got me. Knowing what I know about television, there's got to be a lot of stuff in there. And if you had dark spots, that means burning, and burning means...
Oh, and that wasn't just dark spots. It was smoky smudge.
Yeah. I've had... Sony used to have a... They go 24 inches and 19-inch TVs. They had a horizontal output transistor. And when those things started blowing, you started shaking your head, you know, to fix it. Anyway, let me clear the line for some other human being here. But, yeah, this Hobby Lobby shit is just what it is. It's just, that's what scares me. It isn't scaring much because I won't have to put up with it for too long, you know. Theoretically, but these people are frightening. There's no doubt about it. Because, return with us now to the golden days of yesteryear. Yeah, right. Anyway, take care of yourself.
All right, you have a good evening, Bill. We'll talk soon.
Good night.
Bye now. And let's see, that means, thank you. Thank you. That of course was Bill, our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, legendary bluesman from Cleveland. And, that means the phone lines are lines. I wish the line is open. And what we're going to do, well, it's not open anymore. I was going to take a break, but let's don't and say we didn't. Hey, Tracy.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. I'm not going to leave you on hold because every time I leave you on hold, I wind up losing you.
I know. It's terrible. It is terrible. But, yeah, so Hobby Lobby, huh?
Yeah.
You know, I was just thinking, because I actually hadn't turned on calling yet, and I was just going to listen to the show and just, you know, text you because I am so beyond, just beyond, because I can't believe this shit. They're saying that, you know, because of their
Does Hobby Lobby have a presence in the otherwise civilized land of California?
Until this shit happened, I had never even heard of Hobby Lobby. And you best believe that if they were out here, there would be all folks out there picketing as we speak.
I hope so.
No, but I've never, until this bullshit started, I had never even heard of Hobby Lobby, to tell you the truth.
Well, I despise them. I mean, honest to God, if the goddess of irony was to drop a piano on the Green family, it wouldn't bug me a bit. Well, I would prefer that it be dropped on the head of the Green family, but, you know,
right.
I don't mean on his head, I mean on him alone, you know, move the innocent children aside and everything and just...
They're a corporation.
Yes, they are.
So they're not a church. So
no, they just want to be treated like one. They want their precious religious fifis recognized as qualifying as religious acts of conscience. And yet, and you know what? Maybe this wouldn't bother me so much. No, I think it would. I'm not going to kid myself. But I think this would not bother me quite so much or if other religious objections had not been completely shat upon. Like when the Quakers took the Religious Freedom Reformation Act and said, oh, by the way, we're Quakers. We oppose war. We don't like having our tax dollars go for bombing brown people. And the Supreme Court, practically this very Supreme Court, in many instances, minus maybe Alito and Roberts, said, oh, no. Your religious conscience goes only as far as the tax code ends. Pay up, you bunch of sissies.
Right. Well, see, and here's another thing. What if Hobby Lobby was owned by Muslims?
Oh, no. See, that, no. Then the right wing would be screaming, Sharia law!
Sharia law. Good doggy!
Yeah. See, you know the drill.
Mm-hmm. I just got an email this a little while ago from the Daily Cause that behind the closed door session, the House Ethics Committee has it now that Congress people do not have to disclose when they are being given round trip tickets and stuff on to luxury trips and stuff like that.
Right.
On their financial disclosures.
Because then mm-hmm. we'd know them a little better for what they are.
Mm-hmm. So you're screaming about me being able to go get contraceptives. But you're not worried that the people that you're voting into office have absolutely no can have that can care
no, no accountability?
No accountability.
No, they don't need See, this was a rule put in place by the Republican majority in the House. So they don't have to be accountable because they're acting in Jesus' name anyway, and they wouldn't do anything that Jesus wouldn't like. And by the way, I'm being informed right now by Sandra that in point of fact, Hobby Lobbies are all over Southern California. Four new stores are opening over the next month in SoCal.
Oh, wow. Awesome. But then, aren't most of their stuff made in China?
Absolutely.
And that the government of China allows, I don't know, abortion?
Right, but that's only the tip of the hypocrisy iceberg for Hobby Lobby, Tracy, because, see, if you're an executive with Hobby Lobby, you've got participation
in the 401k.
Right, which is tied into a mutual fund. Which has got more contraceptive stocks and more abortion stocks in it than you can shake a cross at.
Mm-hmm. So, I was reading some of the dissension. I think Ruth Bader Ginsburg was probably good. If she could have had a cow right then and there, she's just done. I think she's just holding on and every time she thinks about retiring, she's like, "Oh hell no!"
See, there's a famous story, Tracy, about Thurgood Marshall when he was a member of the Supreme Court and Richard Nixon was in the White House. And at one point in time, if I've got the story correct, Thurgood Marshall became very seriously ill and was in the hospital, and Richard Nixon sent a White House functionary to check in on Thurgood Marshall, because Nixon hated Thurgood Marshall. And after he had gone there, Thurgood Marshall was well enough to point to the fellow and say, come here. And he got a piece of paper and he scrawled something on it and he folded it up and said, take it back to your boss. And he took it back to Nixon, and Nixon unfolded it, and Thurgood Marshall had written, not yet.
Exactly.
And you know, bless her heart, Ruth Bader Ginsburg has battled with, as I noted earlier, pancreatic cancer. And she is damned well determined to be there as long as she humanly possibly can be, just to make sure that those theocratic punk-ass bastards don't completely get their hooks into things. And she also, you know, I can imagine she'd also like to maybe retire at her advanced age. But you know what? She also knows that she can't do that either because Barack Obama can't get a nominee through the Senate.
Nope.
So what a mess.
I'm still trying to figure out how he got, why can't I say her name? Oh, Sotomayor.
Yeah.
Every time I drive by the school here in L.A., and it gives me tingly feelings all over because the school in Commerce have a school anywhere?
Say what?
Does Clarence Thomas have a school? Because I remember a while back I sent you a text with a picture with Sonia Sotomayor. There's a high school named after her, pretty much where she, in the neighborhood where she grew up.
I don't know. I don't think so.
And she hadn't even she hadn't even been a justice for 5 minutes. They named a high school after her. Brand spanking new beautiful high school.
You know, I was engaged in an ongoing debate last night on my Facebook page with an old friend of mine who happens to be quite conservative. And we grew up together. And he said, yeah, but, you know, Ginsburg dissented and nobody joined her. So you know what I had to do? I had to go back. I had to go play in Supreme Court history. You know how many dissenters there were to Plessy versus Ferguson?
How many?
One.
Mm-hmm.
And yet John Harlan, even though he wrote some pretty nasty racist stuff in his dissent, got it right. In fact, I may have to dig that up and share that. Then I went and I looked at Dred Scott. You know how many dissenters?
One.
Then I looked at Lochner versus New York.
I don't know about that one.
One. That was the one. That's the case that said, that's the case where the Supreme Court said that bakers in New York could not have workplace safety regulations on the hours of numbers that the number of hours that they worked, because that would violate the sanctity of the privity of contract between employer and employee. That if he didn't want to work 16-hour days, he could negotiate for less hours because he's on a level playing field with the employer. And above all, we must stand up for the privity of contract. And then I looked up another one called Schenck. One dissenter. And what you find out, and we attach all this reverence to the Supreme Court because every now and then a blind hog will find an acorn, and you'll get a Brown versus Board of Education out of them. But mostly, if you study it, the history of the Supreme Court of the United States has been a history of getting stuff stunningly wrong and making messes that future generations have to come back and clean up.
I feel absolutely, I knew that this was going to happen, but you know, I have those little, moments of that I just really feel like this is not going to happen. You know, justice will prevail. Yeah. Right.
They are one justice away, Tracy, from being able to undo everything. They're one justice away from effectively declaring unions illegal. They are one justice away from declaring theocratic control of women's bodies. They're one justice away from overturning the right to privacy in Griswold that allows birth control and contraception at all. One vote.
Well, I think about, this whole, because for a while I was going to Planned Parenthood because for contraception, and not because I didn't want to have any more, I don't want to have any more kids because how old am I? Fucking almost 48 years old. But, there's a lot of women out there who use contraceptives, I don't know, to regulate their periods, all sorts of things.
Polycystic ovaries, endometriosis, and pelvic inflammatory disease.
Oh, here it is. Yes. Thank you. So there's going to be a Hobby Lobby 7 miles away from me in Burbank.
Mm-hmm.
Coming soon. Oh, it's opening on... Oh, guess what day it's opening on, Bob? Independence Day.
Oh, for God's sakes.
I kid you not. Opening soon, 7/4/2014.
Well, I know the one in West Covina is opening on 7/18. Nice, huh?
Well, I won't shop there. I mean, I won't.
Well, the problem is this outfit certainly deserves to be picketed every blessed day. People should stand outside it and give away free copies of Margaret Atwood's A Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
But you can't. Because all of these things are in strip mall shopping centers, which are patently, what? Private property.
Private property.
So nobody has to walk a gauntlet of liberals singing Kumbaya to get into Hobby Lobby, like women have to run a gauntlet to get into a reproductive health care clinic.
Mm-hmm. Well, we actually have the reproductive health care clinics out here. There's a couple in strip mall. Does that count?
Yeah, that does. The problem, you know, the problem that arose out of the buffer zone, the reason there was a buffer zone in Massachusetts is because everything's really crowded together. And there's very little private property access where you get, because property is so damnably expensive. So the clinic fronts on a public street and a public sidewalk. The buffer zone in the first place was created after one of these followers of Jesus lost their minds. No, they didn't. Just decided to take law into their own hands and perpetrated a massacre in 1994. Meanwhile, of course, the rats on the Supreme Court, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, and Kennedy, and the other three, they have a 256-foot buffer zone around them.
Mm-hmm.
I just love that. And, you know, all these are giant screaming manifestations of hypocrisy.
I mean, like the whole let's go back to the whole, you know, marriage rights thing and stuff, and you know, between a man and a woman, blah 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 blah. So, if you're an atheist, does that mean your marriage is illegal?
No, it doesn't, because the nature of this inquiry is. It is the effect of the Religious Freedom Reformation Act on the Affordable Care Act, because the Religious Freedom Reformation Act, as passed by Congress, and thanks, Bill, signed into law by Bill Clinton, Glass-Steagall, this Telecommunications Act of 1996, welfare reform. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
This thing was designed to increase the level of scrutiny on any government action on anybody who said their religious rights were being infringed upon. Of course, as long as it didn't touch, as we've noted with the case of the Quakers, the money.
Right. Oh, yeah.
See, this Hobby Lobby business and the Conestoga wood business. These things are they're taking positions that are actually contrary to good practice in terms of business, all right? Because it costs more for insurance to pay for the delivery of a baby than it does for the implantation of an IUD.
IUD. That's the thing. It's like, okay, because let me tell you something. If Miss Tracy became pregnant, first of all, I have to do a lot of explaining to Jan.
Yes, there would be that. That or there damn well better be a star in the East.
Absolutely.
Praise the Lord, he did it again.
Okay, so then we've got to talk about the psychological health, the care, that, mental health care that I would have to receive if I did become pregnant and decided to, you know, go through with the pregnancy. I'm sorry. It's so, you know, that, I'm sorry if I'm going to start talking about lady parts, so you guys don't freak out. But, you know, like I said, I have to take contraception because I have, you know, fibroids, and if I don't, it's going to be terrible. And so, of course, you have to have an exam. So I have the exam, and the lady doctor that just talks with the lady part, she's looking inside, and she's like, how old are you? And I told her I'm like 47. She's like, my God, you know, if you wanted to, you could have a baby like right now. She's like, if you were with a man, you would get pregnant. Like, I said, hurry and put the IUD in and shut up. You know, I mean, I have never heard a doctor go on and on about my uterus before, ever. And I'm like, okay, well, thank you. I'm very proud of the fact that I have, you know, my uterus does not look my age. Whatever. Put the bitch in. Okay. But I just think about, you know, if I, Tracy Porter, worked at Hobby Lobby, and let's just say for a brief minute, I was in a relationship. I had a husband or a boyfriend. And then I get crazily pregnant, but I work for Hobby Lobby. I'm screwed. Again, I have a son.
Well, you're screwed anyway because you're not going to be able to get an abortion under the ACA.
Yes. Exactly.
Let's remember that because that bone was thrown to the right wing long ago. Woo, we can't be paying for no government abortions. Woo, Jesus. So, you know, we knuckled under on that one. It reminds me of one of those, the protests come up with some brilliant signs. Get your theology off my biology. Get your rosaries off my ovaries. And my particular favorite, if men could get pregnant, birth control would be available in gumball machines and taste like bacon.
Exactly. But, somebody sent me, I'm glad this stuff can't get posted on my Facebook page without me, pictures and stuff without me approving. I have some very twisted friends, and they know I have a sick sense of humor, but then, of course, I do have friends that their sense of humor is nowhere near as twisted as mine, and they would find this horribly offensive. You know, the pictures people have in the minivans with the mommy and the daddy and then, like,
yeah,
you know, how they're in the kids. There was a husband and a wife and two coat hangers.
Oh, that's a dandy. I thought you were going to tell me about the one with the husband and the wife and the kid dancing on the pole and the other kid and the other kid with a syringe in his hand.
No, this one, it had two or three coat hangers next to the parents.
Ooh, I bet that drives the wing nuts crazy.
Man, when I saw that, and like I said, you know, my friend sent it to me, and I wrote her back. I'm like, oh, you're so wrong. You're so horribly wrong. That's hilarious. And see, okay, yes, I am a Christian. And yes, you know, I don't have a problem with people choosing, you know, if you want to have an abortion, go ahead. Have an abortion. Do what you want to do because it's your body. I have absolutely no right to tell another human being, another woman, what she can or cannot do with her uterus. So I can laugh at stuff like that. Whereas some of my friends, like my mom, if she had seen that on my Facebook page, I think she would have killed me. She would have exercised her right, even though she doesn't carry a gun. She would have found the bed and she would have taken me out. That she see that on my Facebook page. Because you know my mom's evangelical, so
right,
you know.
Yes.
But I'm just like, oh my God. But see, we can't even allow the stuff like this because people are so crazy about what's going on. Again, you care so much about the fetus, but you're not worried about, like you said, you know, welfare reform and that they've slashed the hell out of food stamps, and people can't even feed their kids. They can't even, you can't even get a decent education anymore. It's cutting funding for this, the funding for that, funding for this. But over, let's take care of the fetus. The fetus has to come out. The fetus cannot spend, can only spend at the most 9 months, maybe 10 months, depending on how far you, you know, if you got the numbers counted right in the mama. So, we're going to have, at some point, the baby is going to have to leave the uterus. And I don't know, they might want to feed the kid. They might want to, I don't know, you know, send the kid to school with, you know, with clothes, and I don't know, have a place to live. You know, these little things. But there's no money for that. There's no money for, you know, decent housing and stuff like that. No, 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 no. No. But we could bomb the, you know, we could find the money to bomb the hell out of some of the brown people now, can't we?
You know we can.
I just, again, I try so hard. I try very desperately not to get myself worked up. But it's kind of hard not to, Bob. It is,
well,
it's kind of hard not to. You know? There's only so many volumes I can take in Xanax. There's only so much I can take. And I'm just hoping that people actually get out and vote in November. I'm hoping that people are just tired of the stupidity and the bullshit. And, you know, we got the campaign of, what is it, Abortion Barbie in Texas and all this other bullshit that's going all around. And that people just sit home and just go, well, gee, maybe things are okay, aren't they? No, of course, they're not.
Not okay at
they're
all.
They're not.
Not okay.
They're not okay at all. They're not okay. And we're just sitting around, you know, going, what do you call it, Walmart, Wally, shopping at Wally World and Hobby Lobby. And is there anything at Walmart made in America?
I don't even know if the computers on the cash registers are American made. Maybe the meat's in the deli case?
I don't know. Aren't we getting some aren't there chickens coming from China now?
Turkeys.
Okay.
Apples for apple juice.
Right. You know, so we're all these people screaming about God bless America and all of this and our freedoms and our religious this and all of this. But you're buying shit from China. You know, nothing in this country is made in this country anymore. But you're always screaming, God bless America, we're the greatest country in the world. Yeah, not so much. I mean, I couldn't imagine living anywhere else.
I remember many, many years ago, Tracy, when I pissed off all the little wing nuts over.
What did you do?
Well, I suggested on the air back when I was on the terrestrial radio in Beckley, I suggested that maybe instead of hollering God bless America so much, the fundies might ought to work on a little bit of God forgive America.
Mm-hmm.
Woo! I think that's when they started calling me Bob Al-Kincaida.
Will they call you Bob Al-Kincaida?
Bob Al-Kincaida.
Get out of here!
And Baghdad Bob.
Bob, like, Tokyo Rose?
Thereabouts.
So you call Baghdad Bob?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, you would have to, I mean, I get what you're saying, because for this to be, the allegedly a Christian country, I'm still trying to find the Jesus in America. I turn on the news, and I'm still looking, because Jesus is no, I don't see him. I don't see him in America anywhere. I do see him in America, but not where it needs to be the most good. Does that make sense?
Thereabouts.
Okay, because I see him in my church. As a matter of fact, my pastor and his is getting married to his boyfriend. They're never getting married tomorrow in a very small private ceremony, and they're adopting a baby. See, that's where I see Jesus. That's where I see Jesus. When I see the pastor of my church, I go to a church where my pastor is marrying his boyfriend. I actually found him a card, and it says, I love the fact that that everybody wears pants, the pants in their family, in your family. And it says, and then on the inside of the card, it says, congratulations, Mr. and Mr. You know, it's one of those things, you know, I see Jesus in my church because I married my girl in my church. And then I see stuff, you know, and then I hear, you know, people saying that I'm an abomination because I love my girl. And that I'm going to hell because I love my girl. And I'm like, but if I love her and she loves me, and the only thing I know about, mostly about Jesus, is that he talks about love and understanding and tolerance and forgiveness and caring about other people and taking care of other people and all these other things and giving to the poor and all that. You know, the whole thing's called the Beatitudes, blessed are this and blessed are that. So, why is it so terrible to take care of the poor? Why is it so terrible to be able to love somebody? I don't know, Bob. I feel like I'm rambling, but that's, you know, that's me. So, but, you know, we have Hobby Lobby. So what else do you see coming down the pike? Oh, wait. We have...
Well, there were 50 cases behind Hobby Lobby in Conestoga that have now been essentially mooted out by this decision. More than half of Americans work for closely held corporations, Tracy. That's what's coming down the pike. They all get...
And when is Chick-fil-A? When I'm waiting for them.
No, they're not coming. We are reasonably safe until the first Monday in October. That's when the gang that can't think straight comes back to work. Now, you know. Maybe.
Wait a minute. Not only did they screw us sideways with no grease or spit with a 2x4, those athletes get off until the first Monday in October.
Yeah. Well, you know that Supreme Court is hard work. I mean, during his vacation time. Fat Tony's gotta craft him a new barbed wire belt and maybe patch his hair shirt and work on his flagellum. John Roberts has to work on his balls and strikes calling, because at this point in time he's calling things strikes that are halfway up to the hot dog stand behind home plate. Sammy Alito needs to get a new suit for his wife. The last time we saw her before she showed up on a milk carton, she was wearing the upholstery from a 1958 Edsel. I hear that Slappy Thomas is working on an entire rug of braided pubic hair.
Oh, God.
And Anthony Kennedy is just going to sit and wring his hands and worry some more and wonder if the rats really, really like him.
Seriously, in all seriousness, do you think this country has a chance after November? Do you think that...
Here's the problem, Tracy. Members of the House of Representatives are elected in districts, and they tend to be happy with whom they have. Guess who's coming back in January? Lily Gohmert. Guess who's coming back in January? Steve King. Guess who's coming back in January? Steve Stockman. Okay?
the odds of us retaking the House are fat and slim just rode out of town for the border.
So we're talking ice cube chance of him.
And that leaves the Senate. And the Senate is the last bulwark against these right-wing barbarians. And you know what? It could flip easy. We know, for instance, that it is almost a 100% likelihood that we will lose one Democratic seat to a Republican in West Virginia. There's no sure thing in Kentucky where Mitch McConnell is trying to hang on to his. Thad Cochran may wind up coming back in Mississippi, so he's safe. It goes on and on and on. Gene Shaheen will probably give a righteous ass thumping to Centerfold Brown. Let's just call him Scott Staple Brown. Where else? Where are there races that could really, really, really matter? It ain't happening in Alabama. Al Franken has to run for re-election now, doesn't he?
Yep. Yeah.
Where else? North Carolina, Kay Hagan is running for her life.
I mean, we did have that beautiful thing when Eric Cantor lost.
Yeah, but who did he lose to? He lost to a guy that makes him look sane.
Yep. But see, you know what? That's what they get. I mean, you had the Boehner and Cantor and all these idiots kowtowing to the Tea Party, and they got whipped. Well, like you said, the ones that whipped them makes Eric Cantor look sane. And, until 2008, I never much paid attention. You know, I just voted and went about my business. But then people started losing their mind. And then 2010 happened. And everybody stayed home. And look what since 2010, we have put up with the crazy. We have been putting up with the crazy upon crazy upon crazy. If the Senate flips, we're fucked until 2016. And then there's no saying that, there's no chance that, there's still not a chance that things will go ever get right again.
This is the grim business that I talk about from time to time. The next census, which means the next significant redistricting of the Congress, is going to come after the 2020 Congress. That means the first real chance for demographics to catch up with the Republicans is 2022. That is 8 long years from now for a session that begins in January 2023.
Oh, my God.
I keep trying to tell people, not that I'm, I'm not trying to be a doomsayer or anything.
But you're preaching reality, though.
But, Tracy, they don't put up bright blinking lights saying empire collapsing in 32 days.
Unless
you're really, really prescient and perspicacious or some other big word. Most people don't realize they're living in a collapse until it's too late. I mean, West Virginia is a classic example. We are living in a collapse here. We don't know it. Because coal's going to keep the lights on. Understand? This whole country is falling apart. The Congress just took a dump on working people, what, the Friday maybe? Yesterday? Refusing to advance a bill for, what was it? Was it unemployment compensation or the VA?
Unemployment they cut unemployment for vets, didn't they?
I think it was something like that. Somebody can straighten me out on that. Larry in the chat room asking, West Virginia is a failed state. We absolutely are a failed state. You can't not be a failed state if you'll let 10,000 gallons of poison reach 300,000 people's faucets. That's the definition of a failed state.
And do nothing about it.
Right.
But it's not
just us. I mean, there are stories that we've been paying attention to on this program for 10 years. There's the fire department in Tennessee that stood around and watched a man's house burn because he was a month behind or something, or hadn't paid his yearly assessment for fire service.
Right, for fire service.
There are roads that have been ground into gravel. There are people in Detroit and West Virginia, particularly in Detroit, who have no access to running freaking water. Now, you can't go on calling yourself a developed nation and have an entire major city or a significant portion of the population thereof not have access to clean, potable water and call yourself a developed nation. We have a higher infant mortality rate and a higher postpartum maternal death rate than Cuba.
Okay, here it is. At the end of this month, unemployment benefits will expire for an estimated 285,000 veterans because Congress will not renew the program.
Need we say more? I mean, what more has to happen? A 2-foot sea level rise. No, not even that. I forget the number I heard a couple of weeks ago in D.C. It's some itsy-bitsy, tiny little miserable number. Sea level rise will displace 5.5 million Americans in Florida. And I'm sitting here on this tiny little itsy-bitsy broadcast asking questions like, hey, have you ever seen a 5.5 million human being out migration? You ain't ready for it.
No. Well, I heard about the Hobby Lobby decision yesterday. It struck me. All they got to say is like, "Where's Nero and his fiddle? Rome's burning."
Yeah.
I just want to go ahead and Federal Express.
And by the way, Tracy, we're going to have another fight over the damn debt ceiling soon.
Oh, Jesus Christ, judicial.
And we are still under, we're still under sequestration austerity. And meanwhile, I'm getting some pushback from Devin on the concept of West Virginia as a failed state, Tracy. Devin says failed state suggests that it was constructed to be successful. It was not. We, West Virginia, were constructed to be a colony, not a state, and we remain so.
Wow.
Meanwhile, Greg with an email says, if the general public accept the verdict regarding Hobby Lobby, you can bet your ass that Richard More of a Dick Murdoch from Talibandiana will be elected into Talibandiana's state senatorship in the next couple of years. I mean, tell me, Bob, Greg says, what other step is there between disallowing a woman's access to safe contraception and rape being a blessing from God? By the way, I have to wonder sometimes if the verdict would not have been the same if a man impregnated Mary and not for those who, for those who believe the story. Remember, Mary would have been stoned to death.
That's for the year.
And there's, you know, there these stories are all over the place. And I can't forget about them because I can't forget about them. I'm not tooting my own trumpet. We all have our own little gifts and abilities, and mine happens to be a pretty profoundly effective memory. And so when something goes in there, it may wander deep, but it'll surface. There are 30 towns in West Texas, you know, real live, honest to God communities that ain't gonna have no water no more because fracking is more important than drinking water. You know, bless their hearts, the state of New York got a huge victory. Dr. John wrote to tell me about it. They got a huge victory.
Did you hear about that?
Yeah,
awesome?
They can ban fracking. You know what? Wait till that goes up to D.C. and the rats. You know, the right wing, and I guess that's the bottom line with a lot of this. The right wing says, "Oh, judicial activism." Well, the only judicial activism that's taking place is being perpetrated by the right wing in the form of theocratic rulings. And while we're on the topic, Tracy, I'm not going to give that 9-0 majority a pass for what they did to women who are trying to get into a clinic. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, for all of her scathing dissent in Hobby Lobby, Ruth Bader Ginsburg voted along with the other 8 justices to say that women have to walk through a damn gauntlet of religious maniacs, one of whom may go from lawful gun owner to awful gun owner in a second's time. She voted with them. Our wise Latina, Sonia Sotomayor, voted with them. Elena Kagan, who wants to be empathetic, voted with them. Stephen Breyer voted with them. 9-0, Tracy.
I'm exhausted. I am absolutely...
I'm sorry. I was yelling. I apologize.
No. Because, see, it's so funny. You know, I got back to school on Monday, and I went last month. Yes, fuck, this is July the 1st. Oh, my God. So last month, they had a new student orientation at Antioch, and one of the classes that they are going to be offering is a writing class on how to write a winning argument without emotion. And I'm like, oh, I can't wait to take that class. Or how to present an argument verbally to also. And without getting, because you know me, I get crazy upset. And I start yelling just as much as you do. And so I'm looking forward to learning how to do these kind of things because I'm a step away from getting all Fannie Lou Hamer on motherfuckers. Okay? Because I'm tired. And I'm a step away from just, I'm at that point where I have to get to somewhere and start talking because somebody's got to listen. It just can't be here in California. We have to get, like you said, you're here, unfortunately, preaching to the choir. When you talk, we listen and we understand. But we are a very small contingent. You know, there has to be some way, somehow.
300 Spartans held off the entire Persian army at Thermopylae. Granted, they all died, but, you know.
They all died? I don't want to die, Bob. There's still other places that I want to see.
No.
And plus, you got to come out here to have a deep fried shrimp taco.
I want one of them so bad. And I was talking to Tim last night. Where's the place in Hollywood that has the great big giant ass apple pies?
You know, you were asking me about that before, and I Googled it, and I couldn't find it.
And I gotta have a hot dog at Pink's, you know.
No. Overrated. I'll take it. Do you really want to stand in line for an hour to have a hot dog?
No. Now I tell you what, I would like to have some sort of kick ass burrito. That's true.
So that's easy. There's a taco truck that I go to periodically when I'm in Silver Lake. It was called, I forget the Torador or something like that, but I had the monster burrito. I think the burrito weighed maybe 5 pounds. That can be 4. Yeah. And it was $6.
And see, down San Diego, I got a list. You know, I do. It's not a bucket list or anything, but I got a list. And I was reading about some restaurant down San Diego way where you can actually get honest-to-God Mexican pulque. Pulque, P-U-L-Q-U-E, what the ancient Mexica people called octli, O-C-T-L-I. It is the fermented sap of the maguey, which is, like what they make tequila out of, agave. It's akin to the maguey. And it's sticky and thick, but I got to try it sometime or another. You know, it was their alcoholic beverage, and I got to taste it.
Ooh. Well, you know, don't feel bad about having a list because, you know, we're having the second wedding in December. And my brother, because, you know, I'm the only one of my siblings still left in L.A. And my brother lives in Atlanta. He has a list of every place that he has to stop after I pick him up from the airport. We have a map of where there's Phil's Barbecue, there's Johnny Pastrami, there's Phil's Taco House, there's a couple of other places, all ending up back in the valley at Tommy's Burger.
Yeah, see, I got to have an In-N-Out Burger, I mean, somewhere along the way.
You know, and so don't feel bad. I have to get these people the other day. They're going to start like in Chicago or wait, somewhere else, Texas. And do like the old Route 66, just primarily to stop at barbecue places. That is all they want to do. They're going to start in Chicago and work their way.
Oh, speaking of which, I was talking to Ben Birch the other day, Tracy, and bad tidings from Chicagoland.
Oh, no.
The awesomest Chicago hot dog stand in the world is closing. It's closing. It's called Hot Dugs, and I think it's closing like in September. The guy just got tired of doing it. This is the guy who fries his French fries in duck fat.
Oh, my God.
And he made all of his own. He's just bored. He's going to close it, do something else.
Well, that's the thing. This place by my house, this guy, he's only open Monday through Friday from like 9 o'clock in the morning to 4 in the afternoon. And it's Bill's Burger Shack or whatever, Bill and Haruko. And I'm pretty sure Haruko is his mellow to bride, don't get mad. Bill's a vet, and I'm pretty sure he brought her back home when he came home. But anyhow, you talk about the best hamburger, and
I will go toe-to-toe to you on the awesome hamburger. I got the place already.
Well, he gets up every morning and makes the chili from scratch for the chili burger.
Ooh.
And he does this thing called it's basically a heart attack on a plate. It's a chili cheeseburger topped with pastrami.
Damn, there's not a law?
No. Mm-mm. So you got your chili cheeseburger.
Ooh.
With pastrami on it.
Well, see, you've heard me talking about that magic spicy hot mustard yellow slaw. I can't explain it. What's going through me, maybe as close as a guy can ever get to a pregnancy craving that a woman has. I have been jonesing so hard for these god awful little hot dogs from a little barbecue stand in Florence, Alabama, and it's been going on for months. And it won't go away.
Yeah, you talk about it all the time. And how far is Alabama from you?
It's 560 miles.
So that's what?
Depending on whether or not everybody can agree to go to the bathroom at the same time, anywhere from 8 to 12 hours.
So, because how far is that from Birmingham?
125 miles northwest.
Yeah, okay, because I may be coming to Atlanta sometime next, well, I will be because Jan and I have to step back to doing our traveling. And I have a cousin that lives in Birmingham, which is now far. I didn't realize just how close Atlanta is to Birmingham.
Yeah, that's just and so, 3 hour. That's a, what, 3 hour drive?
So I don't know.
Two and a half.
And
two and
so
a half.
I must tell my brother about this place because my brother, we'll be in the car and drive for food.
Well, see, and see, these things are nothing fancy. It's not like there's a million ingredients. It's not like it's a really high quality wiener. It is cheap. It is poor folks' food. This barbecue joint, this barbecue joint's been in existence for dear God, you know, 70 years. And it was a black family owned it, started it. They used to have curb service back when the county was dry. It was said that, you know, you could get anything there. You know, I want the special hot dog, and out comes the pint of Jack Daniels. You know what I mean? But, you know, killer barbecue. But these little hot dogs that are nothing but this hot dog and the slaw, and it's pressed, and it'll light you.
Is it the kind of hot dog that when you bite into it, it snaps?
No. No, these are the cheapest weenies on earth.
Really?
Yeah, I mean low down. But they load, load them up with this homemade slaw. And it's hot and spicy and sweet and tangy all at the same time. And I think maybe there's like a little stripe of their barbecue sauce or something through it. And they press it between the plates of the flat side of a waffle iron. When I imitate them up here, I heat two iron skillets and press them between the bottom of one hot iron skillet and the surface of the other skillet just to try to get close. And I can never get it quite right. And I can sit down and get a dozen of these damn things in one sitting. I mean, when I was working in radio and stuff, I would stop there and get one barbecue and four hot dogs, and that was dinner. And it's crazy. And there's a little hamburger joint there that does hamburgers that are my definition of hamburger. I mean, it's, you know.
What's your definition of a hamburger?
No, I mean, it's just this little place. It's called Stagg's Grocery in East Florence. And they make these massive hamburgers that have never been frozen. They patty them out by hand. It's a tiny little place. You just tell them, give it to me with everything. And it's lettuce and tomatoes and onions and mayo and mustard and ketchup and cheese. And then they toast the buns. The inside of the buns. They toast the inside of the buns in the hamburger grease so that they're golden.
Is that the way you're supposed to?
Yes. And they're,
I mean,
and,
I,
and they're,
I,
and they're, and they're just godlike.
The hamburger place.
They're just godlike. And then there's a little place across the river where you can get grilled oysters.
I'm sorry.
Well, get over it. Because these things are freaking awesome. They shuck the oysters and they set them on the grill and let them roast in their own juices and serve them up with butter or however you want. And you just sit and slurp them and they're magnificent.
Well, because I've tried oysters and now I did have, there is a place out here called the Boiling Crab. You order your, so you have shrimp, you have crab, you got lobster, oysters, and what have you. They do the oysters fresh. And so they dared me to try the oysters because I just kept looking at them like I was kind of rich. And I'm like, okay, but you leave me alone. So when I try the oysters and I don't pass out, will I be left alone about never eating oysters? And so I had an oyster, and actually it wasn't terrible. It was so fresh, I could taste the ocean.
Yes, that's what makes them beautiful. And depending on where they come from, they taste differently. Some are saltier. Some have a more metallic quality to them, depending on where they lived and grew. And, oh, no, I get real worked up about that. But I got to tell you, because, you know, we're coming up on the 4th of July, and I'm thinking about ribs. Your brother is an hour and 15 minutes drive from the best ribs in the world.
Okay, let me write this down because he tell me where it is so I can send it to him.
Tuscaloosa, Alabama, dreamland. Their motto is ain't
nothing.
Tuscaloosa, Alabama, dreamland barbecue.
Oh, dreamland barbecue.
Mm-hmm. And it's on, oh, God, I used to remember the name of the street, but it's off McFarland Avenue in Tuscaloosa, and it's an institution, and their motto is, ain't nothing like them nowhere. And you know what? They are not lying.
Well, because I remember when he first moved down south, he moved to North Carolina, and he was appalled because of the, because I guess in North Carolina they have that vinegar,
depends on where you are.
Well, that's the first time he had barbecue when he moved to North Carolina, and he was pissed. He was like, what the hell is this? Because, you know, we grew up eating, I mean, we're from California, but we grew up eating, you know, barbecue, you know, Texas style and, you know, Mississippi and stuff like that. There was no vinegar anywhere near the barbecue that we grew up eating. And so,
they'll do at Dreamland, they'll bring you your slab of ribs, and it'll be cut up to make it easy to handle. And they'll bring you a plate of cheap white light bread for sauce.
You gotta have light bread. That's right, light bread.
For sauce sopping.
Yeah, you gotta sop up the sauce. Come on, man. I told you my folks was from the south. I know these things.
And then there's Decatur, Alabama, and Big Bob Gibson's barbecue, where they Big Bob Gibson's, where they do white barbecue sauce.
White barbecue sauce?
Mm-hmm. It is 17 kinds of yummy.
What is the base? What do they use? How do they make it white?
It's like buttermilk and mayo and vinegar and sugar and Worcestershire and magic secret ingredients. And when you're doing a chicken on the grill, maybe you smoked it. And you take your basting brush and you baste it. You paint it with this white barbecue sauce, and then it disappears, leaving nothing but the magnificence of the flavor. And yes, Jay Cruzen, I will put Alabama barbecue above North Carolina barbecue, and I'll fight over it too.
North Carolina, okay, like I said, I've had North Carolina, and the damn pulled pork. I'm sorry, all my brethren from North Carolina, I cannot hang. With North Carolina barbecue, I'm sorry, I still love y'all, but if I have to choose, I love me some Memphis style, I love me some Texas style, and some Mississippi style, but
well, see, we're running out of time, but you know, let me get clear on something. I used to think the idea of barbecuing beef was a sad and sorry heresy. Until I got down there for the first time ever last September, and Dr. Allen kindly took me to a little barbecue joint called Miller's in Belton, Texas, and holy God!
You mean you've never had? Because you had never had barbecue beef?
No, I'm a pork. You know, God intended pork and chickens to be barbecued.
Oh, honey.
I'm converted. I'm absolutely converted. I got to get out of here, Tracy. Among other things, I'm starving to death now, dadgummit.
I know. I'm starving now. Thank you.
Spicy chicken ramen noodles with the flavor boost packet. I'm going to be all over it.
Well, I'm not going to tell you what I think if I haven't
been. Just
really
don't. There ain't no point in being mean.
I won't do that to you because I love you too much.
Thank you, Tracy. You have a wonderful evening, dear.
Always.
Bye now. Tracy, the lady cab driver, calling from L.A. It is time to get out of here. Quick note coming in from Asa in Vancouver. Jesus, Bob. Grilled oysters? Now you're talking my language. Yeah. Oh, by the way, we have a new acronym for the Supreme Court. Got to get out of here quick, coming in via Jessica. Supreme Court Rats of the United America. Spell scrotum. I like it. Thanks to everybody who makes all this happen. Big thanks to Dan and to Kate who finished off fundraising this evening. We have met Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge within the evening, and that is a big, big deal. Back tomorrow night with prayer meeting Wednesday. Hot diggity. Thanks, y'all. Have a wonderful evening. We'll catch you in the Cathedral of Common Sense tomorrow. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.